Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the NFL Free For All with your host, Brian Breaking News Hughes.
My surprise pick, James, and I know a lot of people probably think I'm crazy, and a lot of people, they have this guy listed as a mid-round pick, but I think he's going to be a late one, early two pick. Number three for me, Phil Taylor, the defensive tackle from Baylor, 6'4", 340, seven tackles for loss, two sacks, just an absolute monster in the middle, can absorb double teams with ease. Very, very hard to move out of the lane. Very, very physically strong. You love this kid. Love what he can do.
Jay, Mr. Controversy Greenwood.
All right, well, let me get this straight. 68% of Los Angeles believe that this kid is the MVP of the damn league over guys like Aaron Rodgers, and I'm the one with the unrealistic view of Tim Tebow. Believe.
So, all in all, if you're going to compare him to Brady, you're going to compare him to Manning, those two are arguably automatic going into the Hall of Fame. But come on, man, this guy has done work from 99 to about 2008, 2009, before he got shipped out.
Only on SportsNewsChef.com.
Welcome, everybody. This is the NFL Front Office Show. I am one of your co-hosts for the evening, James, Mr. Controversy Greenwood, and with me, hopefully, is the Master of Ceremonies, Brian Breaking News Hughes. Brian, are you on the line?
Yeah, absolutely, James. Thank you so much for the colorful introduction. I had my phone muted. Not a great way to start the show there technically, but let me just say thank you to the many, many people in the chat room. We got some new faces in the chat room tonight, James. New people on the phone lines. I see a Niners fan in the kitchen. I got to give him a shout out. Niners, I'm a Niners fan. Our boys are looking pretty good. But, James, you know what? I think it's only right that we start the show a certain way here, and I want to talk about our mock draft here in a second, but let me start by shamelessly plugging our website, sportscitychefs.com. Once again, www.sportcitychefs.com. If you have not went there, you are sorely missing out. Not only are all of our interviews with some high-level NFL athletes like Pro Bowl alternate Naval Bowman up there, like Jason Pierre-Paul, who was one of the NFL sack leaders last year. We have several NFL interviews up there. We just got done conducting interviews with such names like Tommy Streeter, Josh Robinson. So, I mean, we have a ton of interviews. This is the network that you want to be listening to. Plus, we have, you know, your daily news articles. Plus, we have our blogs. We really have so much going on right now, James. But if you could, Mr. Controversy, we do have, like I said, we do have a few people in the chat room right now. Why don't you tell them about the mock draft that we have going on here? Because this is a big event. Give them the dates. And if you could, explain a little bit about why this is different than your average draft and your average mock draft that people might conduct, you know, in some of these quote unquote forum sites.
Well, this is the 5 rounds in 5 days mock draft. We're actually going to do 5 rounds in 4 days this year. We're going to double up on Saturday, and this is different than anything I've seen in anywhere else. And the biggest difference between what we do and what you see everywhere else is basically we are actually doing this live. This is basically as close to a draft war room experience as you can get. We are going to go we're going to get 32 general managers to control 32 teams. We are going to allow them to do trades. We're going to allow them to do anything that they see fit for four or five rounds of a mock draft. They will be sending in the picks to the commissioner, which for most of the days will be myself, and then we will have pick-by-pick analysis from Brian, from our own Brian Hughes, as well as Shane P. Hallam from DraftCountdown.com. And it's a really cool and interesting way to do this, because the GMs have to kind of react on the fly, which allows for them to maybe panic a little bit and say, hey, we've got to get a cornerback in this draft class, or else we are going to be in some serious trouble like we were last year. So we got to reach on a guy. Or you can see different general managers with different valuations on the prospects. That helps out a lot, too, because you can see, like, last year we saw Ryan Mallett getting taken ahead of Christian Ponder. We saw guys like Joseph Barksdale taken, I believe, in round two by the Buffalo Bills. So it really gives you kind of a feel as to how the draft might go. And also, you get Shane P. Hallam and Brian Hughes giving you their thoughts, their analysis on the picks. So you can say, hey, you know what? If this does happen in real life, then who knows? And you know what? I will know that this is probably not the best pick for my team right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the one thing, you know, and I want to reiterate this, James, because I think that you have done a fantastic job of clearly identifying this, but I think one of the things that clearly makes this draft unique, besides the fact that it's just live, is that you have two guys in Shane P. Hallam, who works for NFL Draft Countdown, very reputable site, very reputable NFL mock draft agency / scouting reports. They do all that kind of stuff. And then you have myself, who works for SportsCityChefs.com. I mean, we do this all the time. James here, he's selling himself a little bit short, but and James Greenwood, we do this all the time. And I think there is such a uniqueness, James, in the fact that you're able to get that immediate reaction to your pick. That's something that in the mock drafts that you know as well as somebody who following these things and even have participated in the past, you might get additional information or people's thoughts on your picks, but a lot of times, you know, you have biased points of view. You have, you know, it might take a few days to get this information back to you. Remember, you're going to be getting live, up-to-the-minute picks, information, analysis as the picks are coming in. You're going to get foresight as to what the team needs are. You know, we're going to be telling you what our ideas are, what our thoughts are for the teams. And what I love about this, James, is that, you know, like we seen last year with some of these picks, you see one or two people make picks that you weren't anticipating, like happens in the real NFL draft. And all of a sudden, you see teams go in full-blown scramble mode. And that's really, to me, when the draft really begins. When the guy that you expected to be there is no longer there, and you have to figure out, well, what is plan B?
Absolutely. And that's half the fun of it. Because it's, you know, if we're rolling out a mock draft, and, you know, how most people do the mock draft is they go through, they say, hey, this pick fits here, and it makes sense. Let's move on to the next pick. And there is no surprises. There are no trades, for that matter, or there's very rarely trades unless it becomes a bit one-sided in that sense. And this one, it's really pressure, hunker down, on the clock. Teams are saying, hey, you know what? I have to move up to this pick, and I have to jump to the Dallas Cowboys to get the wide receiver that I want. So I've got to go up there and make that move. And that's something – and just the fact that it's 32 different people, and I can't stress that enough, how it's 32 different guys and 32 different ways of evaluating talent, and let's face it, 32 different schemes, it really kind of helps shape this in a way that seems just like draft day almost.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the only thing I'm going to leave this with, James, you know what, for the people that are out there thinking to themselves, well, you know what, I am a huge Niners fan, Steelers fan, Dolphins fan, Lions fan, whatever it is your favorite team is. Or maybe, you know what, you say, hey, you know what, as a challenge, maybe I'll take on one of my rivals. I want to pretend I'm Ted Thompson. That's the general manager for the Packers. And I want to see if I can do a good draft. I want to get involved with this, James. This sounds awesome. What are the dates? And where do I go to sign up for this awesome Sports City Chef / NFL Draft Countdown event?
Well, the dates, it starts on Wednesday night, on April 11th. That's going to be 2 weeks before the draft, so all the information will be in, and you'll be able to do as much analysis as you really need to be as ready as you need to be for this. And that's our normal time slot on Wednesday from 11 p.m. on till 1 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard, and with the 8 to 11 on the West Coast. And then that it continues on Thursday, Friday, from 10 to 12 Eastern Standard. That's p.m., 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Standard. And then on Saturday, there will be two times for the fourth and fifth rounds. Both will be conducted on the same day. We are currently nailing down a time for the fourth round, but expect it to be probably sometime in the later afternoon, probably 7 or 8 o'clock, or probably around 7 to 9. And then it will be, once again, 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock Eastern Standard for round 5. So to sign up for it, you'd go to draftcountdown.com, and you click the Forums tab. And within the Forums tab, you can go to the Fantasy section, and it should be somewhere right around the top for the round or for the 5 rounds in 5 days mock draft sign up sheet. And or you can email us at sportscitychef.com or sportscitychef@gmail.com and give us your name. But I do highly recommend you do sign up for the forums, because it's a lot easier to work out trades within the forums than it is outside of the forums.
Absolutely. And you know what, let me, you know, not to get off the subject, James, but I do want to quickly just point this out. So, you know, in preparation for the show, just kind of, you know, doing our normal show promotions on Twitter, I put a tweet out there about the show, and I also, you know, asked, you know, anybody who'd like to stop by. And Tommy Strader actually hit me up on Twitter and said that he's going to be stopping by the show. So I don't know if he's going to call in or if he's just going to be listening in. But you know what? Definitely appreciate him stopping by the show last Friday, and I hope he enjoys the show. But, James, I want to go ahead and dive into some of the NFL news from this last weekend. Obviously, Broncos officially trade quarterback Tim Tebow to the Jets for a fourth, a sixth, and in return, the Jets gave a seventh and paid $2.5 million. We talked about that a little bit, but I wanted to make sure that we got that completely. There are some new rules for the 2012 season, James. I'm sure you know some of this, but the new new overtime rules did pass, so they will be in effect for regular season, thus meaning the game cannot end on a field goal. Basically, if you score a field goal, the other team will get an opportunity to possess the ball. The game will only end if you score a touchdown. Also, pushing trade deadlines back from week 6 to week 8 is on the table, but there needs to be some further discussions, but it looks like that might pass. And then the other big thing is that the league is actually going to be implementing booth replays on all turnovers. Right now they have it on all scoring plays, but also on all turnovers. So it'll automatically be, automatically be reviewed. That's the bigger ones. I mean, there is some other ones. Loss of down penalty added for illegal kicking. Also, recipients of crackback blocks is regarded as a defenseless player, which would be a 15-yard penalty. You know, these are all just, you know, some of the rule changes, that are going to be happening here for 2012. Nothing huge. Rams did sign Torrey Holt to a one-day contract, so he could officially retire as a Rams. Classy move. Eagles placed cornerback Asante Samuel officially on the trade block. Sources and rumors say there are several suitors for his services. San Francisco 49ers signed former Giants running back Brandon Jacobs to a one-year contract on the same day that the Bears signed former Giants wide receiver Devin Thomas to a one-year deal. Bengals did re-up linebacker Manny Lawson, and the NFL compensatory draft picks were announced. Green Bay, the New York Jets, and the Browns stole the show, each receiving four compensatory picks. The only team to have a third-round pick is the Oakland Raiders. That is basically the news from the past week. James, let's start with the compensatory picks for maybe some people right now that are in the chat room that are listening in. Can you explain a little bit about the compensatory picks, how they work, and you know, basically, you know, without coming up with the whole formula, but just in layman terms, why Oakland, let's say, got a third-round pick, which is the highest compensatory pick you can receive, and other teams, you know, obviously fared much worse as far as how many picks they got, and some teams didn't get a pick.
Well, in general, how comp picks work is there is this giant formula, but to put it right down to brass tacks, it's basically what you lose in free agency, and they usually determine the level of player that you've lost in free agency by how much that person gets paid. So the Raiders got a third-round pick for losing Nnamdi Asamoah, but it also kind of subtracts the money that you take in. So say Nnamdi left for a $50 million contract, and then you sign, I don't know, I'm going to throw a name out there, Kevin Boss, even though he's not a $50 million player. But, you know, you sign Kevin Boss to a $50 million contract as well, that negates it out, and you don't get a compensation pick for that move. But, and this also does not count as far as cuts go as well. If you cut a player, you get no compensation for that pick. So, basically, it's those guys who leave, like LeBron James going to South Beach. If LeBron goes to South Beach in the NFL system, the Cleveland Cavaliers get a third round compensatory pick. So in a nutshell, that's how it works.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think you did a pretty good job of explaining that, James. So we do have the Raiders who had a third round pick. And like I mentioned, there was a few teams. I'm just going to quickly kind of go over these, James. Oakland did receive a third-round pick. In the fourth round, you have Minnesota, Oakland, Baltimore, the New York Giants, Green Bay Packers twice, and the Minnesota Vikings in round four. Round five, you had Oakland again, so they have a comp pick in rounds three, four, and five. So round five, you have the Oakland Raiders once again, Baltimore Ravens, Indianapolis Colts. Round six, you have the Jets twice, Cleveland Browns twice, Colts, and the Panthers. And then in round seven, it's a slew of people, so I don't want to necessarily get into all that. But the Mr. Irrelevant, last pick of the draft this year, last year was the Rams. They fall one comp pick short. This year it will be the Indianapolis Colts. You know, and it is worth mentioning that there has been several notable guys who have been selected with these comp picks. And you know what, this does shape the draft because obviously, you know, a guy selected with a third round comp pick, you're still talking about a guy who's a top 100 guy, James. So it will be interesting. But I do want to talk a little free agency news. You know, I don't want to kill free agency news, but we do got a Niner fan in here. I know you're a big Lions guy. Lions announced that they did re-sign Kevin Smith to a one-year deal. I know many, many fans that are, I guess you could say, torn on this. And another big running back news that I wanted to mention, and I'm sure you've heard of this, but last week Michael Bush signed a four-year, $14 million deal with the Bears, and I don't know if you heard the fallout, but basically Matt Forte was absolutely livid, not that they brought in another guy, but all the struggles he's had with trying to get a fair deal out of these guys, and they basically gave this guy, if you break it down, about $2 million less a year than what Matt Forte was asking for. I mean, they basically paid him almost $4 million a year, and Matt Forte was asking for a six-year deal roughly at about $32 million, which is about $5.5 to $6 million a year. What's your thoughts? Let's start there tonight. Matt Forte, this is just a crazy, crazy situation. What's your thoughts on Matt Forte, the highs, the lows? I mean, just everything that has went on with Matt Forte, from being that guy that was a stand-up guy opposite of DeSean Jackson to his team signing all these big, bringing on big contracts, like bringing in a Brandon Marshall, signing a Devin Thomas to a one-year deal, adding weapons, bringing in a Michael Bush, who many people thought could be a starter in this league. What's your overall thought process and impression of this team? And if you're Matt Forte's loved ones, or if you are Matt Forte's agent, what is your words of encouragement or wisdom for this guy at this point?
Well, I mean, first I'll say that Michael Bush is a very good running back, and really I think they're looking – every team, this is a copycat league, and every team is moving closer towards that 1-2 punch. Those two guys is not only extend the livelihood of the running back, but it also keeps legs fresh. It does a lot of things for the running game, which is kind of disappearing a little bit in today's NFL, but still – that's still the kind of the way people are going. So I understand why he might be a bit mad, but let's put it in I also think length of the contract had a lot to do with it, because Matt Forte is really kind of, I mean, as far as running backs goes, he's probably got, if he gave that six-year contract, he probably wouldn't be worth it by the end of the contract, and that's just kind of the nature of the beast when it comes to running back. So that it might not have been the amount of money per year, but the amount of years that the running backs that Matt Forte was getting that becomes a problem. Plus, even if you do lose Matt Forte, and trust me, he is a probably a top five running back in the NFL right now. Even a top five running back of his stature can, in many years, get replaced by a fourth, fifth round pick. It just that seems to be the nature of the beast and how everything goes along in the NFL these days as far as running backs are concerned. But I think it's a good move by the Bears, as long as Matt Forte does not pick up and leave. And your words of encouragement are, you're going to be a free agent soon, and you can either stick it to them or you can leave them. And you have that choice in a couple of years, so be patient for now, and be prepared, and have them be prepared for when they do get all of this extra money, and that's what's going to be happening next year, is they are going to be getting a significant amount of extra cap space, and they're going to have to spend a significantly bigger portion of their open free cap space on Matt Forte. So just wait a little bit and good things will come to you.
You bring up some good points, James, and I understand what you're saying. I understand the thought process behind what you're saying. I guess my issue, like I'm saying, I guess my issue is, you make a four-year, $14.8, let's say, million-dollar investment. They guaranteed $8 million to Michael Bush. And when you look guaranteed-wise, I mean, Marshawn Lynch, who signed for over $32 million at the four-year mark, only got $17 million. So you're talking about a different – I mean – The guaranteed is the thing that kind of bothers me, I guess. And I like Michael Bush a ton. And I think there's certain situations where you bring guys in and it sparks. It ignites a fire. It drives a fire under guys. I don't think Matt Forte is that kind of guy. I don't think he needs to be motivated. And to me, James, I thought this came off just totally the wrong way. And I was the first one to say, look, DeSean Jackson, everybody's saying, you know, DeSean Jackson, look, what an ungrateful person. You know, look at how Matt Forte is handling his business. And even I said that to a certain degree. But at the same time, DeSean Jackson got paid 5 years, $51 million, even after acting like a baby. And I'd be the first one to say that. Matt Forte has always been just the most upstanding, respectful guy. And remember, this guy came into the league young, James. He's only 25 years old. When the season starts, he will be 25 years old. To me, as good of a pass catcher as this guy is, you bring in a Brandon Marshall. It's okay to pay that contract, that big contract. It's okay to bring in a Michael Bush. Pay the man. To me, this is the kind of stuff, James, that to me can take a team that's on the verge of being the cusp of being a championship contender and really just crush spirit. Because if a guy goes above and beyond and really performs above expectations, and teammates and potential free agents see that you are not willing to pay the guy, you know, to me, it makes me leery. If I'm an athlete, if I'm a teammate, I start to wonder about the situation. Maybe there's something going on behind closed doors that we don't know about. But everything I've seen from Matt Forte, every post, every article, every interview, everything his teammates have said, everything has supported the fact that he is a team-oriented guy. He busted his butt to get back from injury as quick as he could. And you know what? He might not have made it back, but he didn't even have to push as hard as he did. And it just shows you the kind of guy he is. And it's like, you know, I just wonder sometimes about these teams. Why would you not pay the face of your franchise? This guy accounted for a larger percentage of this offense than any other player in the entire league last year while he was healthy and in the game. And they were 7-3 while he was healthy and playing. I just don't get it.
Like I said, I do understand it. And I do think that they're going to end up paying for it later. I'm not saying this is a good decision not to lock him up long term. This is kind of the idea of what the Lions they're kind of thinking when they re-upped with Calvin Johnson. They said, hey, this guy is our franchise. Matt Stafford without Calvin Johnson isn't nearly as good as Matt Stafford with Calvin Johnson. This is a fact. There's no denying this. I don't even think Matthew Stafford himself would say, hey, you know what? I could do just as well without Calvin Johnson. I don't think I don't think anybody on the face of this planet would say that Calvin Johnson is not probably the most important player on the Detroit Lions franchise right now. That's why they re-upped with him, and they re-upped with him now. Re-upping with your best player now is a smart idea for several reasons, especially guys like Calvin and like Matt Forte, for several reasons. First of all, they are not going to see a large chunk of cap space come in and say, hey, I want a new contract. They're going to say, hey, I signed this contract. I want to go through with the rest of this contract. So you don't have to worry about them being a baby for 6 years. And also, when you do start coming into a lot more cap space, you're going to have a significantly lesser and lesser portion of the salary cap going towards your top guys. So while this was not a smart idea from the Bears, this is actually probably going to turn out to be better for Matt Forte if he does not re-injure himself.
Interesting thoughts. Yeah, you know what? It bothers me. It really does. It bothers me a little bit. And Matt Forte, for the first time via Twitter, and I follow the guy, expressed some frustration last week, you know, basically saying, hey, look, every year I've been in the NFL, since being a Baylor Bear, the Bears have brought in competition, and every year I have shown them why I deserve to be the starter and deserve to be trusted. Why not why not show that same commitment to me now? It was basically something like that. And I do. I understand it. I get it. And I know there's a business side to things. Smart business is locking up the producers in your company. If you're a sales, you know, if your company is driven by sales, and your number one seller, your number one producer, you say, you know what, go ahead and just finish this year out. And after you sell a whole bunch of accounts and stuff, we'll talk to you later. To me, that doesn't make sense because now you're giving other people an opportunity. And I don't know, like you said, you know, it makes him think, well, you know what, maybe New England's not a bad idea. Maybe, you know, some of these other teams who need a running game, who've got a great, you know, passing game, maybe that would not be a bad idea because Matt Forte is so adept catching the ball out of the backfield. But, James, if you don't have any further thing on Matt Forte, I want to switch gears and I want to switch it up and start talking about the New Orleans Saints.
Absolutely. Let's go on with it.
All right. Well, as many people know, I want to just reiterate this for the people that are in the chat room. For many, many of you, you probably already know this, so we're probably hashing up old news. But it did come down after our show last week, so I think it's important to talk about. The NFL did come down heavy-handed, James, as we expected, to, you know, as a stand to show that player safety is important. And basically what they said was, look, we're going to dock you a 2012 second-round pick, a 2013 second-round pick. They suspended Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator for the St. Louis Rams, indefinitely. He has been the defensive coordinator in New Orleans for the last three seasons during this whole Bounty Gate program where they supposedly had bounties on other teams' offensive players that the Saints played against. And basically because of this whole tumultuous situation, the team has been heavily fined. And to me, the biggest key component here, Sean Payton, the head coach, a very, very innovative, bright mind when it comes to game planning, especially on the fly, will be suspended indefinitely. When you consider all the heavy, the stiff fines, the state in which the morale of this team is probably, the fact that Sean Payton will not be there, and basically the early exit in the playoffs the last couple years, do you see the Saints as contenders or pretenders in the NFC going into the 2012-2013 season, James?
Well, there's going to be a lot of things that are going to really drive this thought process. First of all, who are they going to get to take on the head coaching role? There are rumors that Bill Parcells is on the line for doing this. There's going to be a lot of questions about his Hall of Fame bid and would he sacrifice that for just 1 year. There's a lot of things going on with Bill Parcells, so we don't know if he's actually going to step up and take that position. But Bill Parcells is the kind of guy who's very similar and actually was the mentor of Sean Payton while he was in Dallas. So it would fit, and it would really be a boost to this team to have a guy who has Super Bowl rings, who commands respect in that locker room, to be able to come in and do those sort of things. But let's say, for the sake of argument, that Bill Parcells says thanks, but no thanks to a one-year coaching gig with the Saints. After that, I mean, who knows what else they would be thinking about doing in that situation, and that becomes a lot harder. Then you also have to look at the draft. I know they don't have a first-round pick and they don't have a second-round pick, but sometimes third-round picks can come in and really surprise you. Hell, even fourth-round picks can come in and surprise you from time to time. But unless they really knock it out of the park, especially with your GM kind of facing his own suspension at this point, I'm going to say the pretenders at this point. At this point, looking at how the rest of that division is holding up and is really building on themselves, I think it's very well possible that the Saints could be the bottom feeder of that division. Because if you're looking at what the Buccaneers are doing, they've got a great head coach in Greg Schiano. I'm very happy to see that this guy is getting a head coaching gig. I've thought for years that this guy should be head coaching material, and he's finally getting that opportunity. They're definitely they're restocking their team in a very good way. Grabbing Vincent Jackson was a huge improvement to the wide receiving core and should really help out Mike Williams as well as Josh Freeman. So, and then you've got the Falcons, who were strong last year and are probably going to be better this year just with the added chemistry. And then finally, it's the Carolina Panthers with Cam Newton, and they're also going to have a lot of additions as far as rookie talent is concerned through the draft on that defensive side of the football. So they're going to be in a real struggle to try to rebuild. Or not to rebuild, but to keep themselves consistent without their head coach, in which, you know, during the season when they lost him from the sidelines, that was their worst time of the season. And I think, if I remember correctly, and you can't correct me if I'm wrong on this, I believe that loss to the Rams was when Sean Payton was up in the booth as opposed to on the sidelines.
No, actually, you're absolutely correct on that, James. And I hear what you're saying. It's still hard for me at this point to even fathom the Saints being the bottom feeder on this division. Because number one, they play 8 of their 16 games at home, and we know this is a vastly different team at home than on the road. They did lock up Marcus Colston. Robert Meacham is a loss, make no mistake about it, but you still have Devery Henderson, you still have Lance Moore, Marcus Colston, you have Jimmy Graham. We still have plenty of weapons. You have your young running back in Mark Ingram now with another year of experience under the belt. They did lose Carl Nix, but they got Ben Grubbs, probably the second-best offensive guard in free agency, to replace that hole, if you will. And so in my mind, it's not really a hole. I mean, he's got to learn the scheme, but I think Ben Grubbs is an excellent guard. So really, to me, what this comes down to is chemistry, and is this team going to basically unite around the fact that Sean Payton's not there, and basically let's do this for New Orleans, backs against the wall, everybody's against us kind of mentality, or do they just buckle and fold? I think it's got to start, James, with this team paying Drew Brees, making a commitment to Drew Brees that, hey, you're our quarterback now and into the conceivable future, not allow this guy to play on the franchise tag. Because like we've talked about last episode, you know, this guy played on the franchise tag with the San Diego Chargers, and we've seen what happened with him then. He got injured. A lot of people said, look, you know, that kind of shoulder injury, his career might be over. So you know he's got a lot of questions in his head, and they're going to need Drew Brees this season probably more than they have really in the last few years, and he's been dynamite. But, he, you know, the leadership he exudes, that's going to have to be times two for this to be a team that's going to, you know, be a serious contender in the NFC. Wouldn't you agree?
I would completely agree. The division's hard enough as it is. You don't want a disgruntled quarterback on top of your problems.
All right, James. So, you know, ESPN calls it the six-pack of questions, but we're here at Sports City dicing things up in the kitchen. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the three-course meal of questions, if you will. First question I'm going to ask you, Patriots made the Super Bowl last year, and have made some improvements this year, adding guys like Brandon Lloyd, who many people believe to be a great pickup. Are the Patriots going to be better this year than they were last year?
Depends on what you mean by better. Are they a better team this year than they were last year? Absolutely. I do believe that as a team as a whole, they have made a vast improvement and a vast commitment to their wide receivers. Brandon Lloyd has gone
basically followed Josh McDaniels from city to city and has been pretty successful in every single step of the way. So I do believe that he will be a marked improvement for that team going in the future. Plus, they signed and renegotiated with several other guys, and there's going to be a real battle in training camp. They've got a deep threat now. They've got maybe the second year with them and with Ocho Cinco might bear fruit a little bit. Who knows? And they also got Deion Branch back as well. So this is a team that has vastly improved. Plus, let's not forget they've got two first-round picks to play around with as well.
All right. The Carolina Panthers surprised quite a few folks last year behind the stellar play of quarterback Cam Newton. Could they be serious contenders for the playoffs in a very, very competitive NFC South?
Could they be contenders in this? Yes, absolutely they can. I fully believe that with a good draft, and this is going, because that defense has not improved that much over the free agency period, and Cam Newton is dynamic, but there is always the chance of a sophomore slump. I don't believe we will see the same kind of production that we saw in year one from Cam Newton. We'll see him take a small step back, so that's why that defense is going to even more so need to step up and be able to make the plays and keep these scores at least a little bit closer or a little bit lower for the other team, I should say, because let's face it, they lost a lot of close games, but most of them were shootouts, and you can't have a strong strategy that way. So are they contenders? Depends on the draft.
Last question. You've seen my San Francisco 49ers make some notable improvements to that offense, an offense that both of us basically said, look, was stagnant. They bring in a Randy Moss. They bring in a Mario Manningham. And by the way, this last week, matter of fact, this morning, they sign Brandon Jacobs to be the earth in our Earth, Wind, and Fire with Frank Gore, Kendall Hunter, and now Brandon Jacobs. Are the 49ers now the best team in the NFC, or would you still give that crown to the Packers?
Well, I didn't think it was the Packers last year, and I'm not going to – so if it's between the two, I'm saying it's the San Francisco 49ers. The only – I mean, right now the Packers are worse. I know they picked up Jeff Saturday, which could turn out to be a very good move, but let's call it what it is. The offensive line is still weak. The defensive front seven needs some vast improvements. And let's not forget Charles Woodson is getting ancient. So they might be in for a rude awakening if Charles Woodson ends up breaking down this year, which, I mean, the guy is reaching his mid-30s. The old man is not going to be able to last for too much longer. So if it's between those two, I would probably put my money on the – actually, I don't think it really matters who else is in the conversation. I would probably put the Eagles right up there with the San Francisco 49ers. But when it's all said and done, I think San Francisco, if Alex Smith can reproduce what he did last year, then I would say that San Francisco is probably, as of right now, pre-draft, the best team in the NFC.
All right, interesting stuff. This is the part of the show where I'm going to ask fans of Sports City, people here on Blog Talk, to please call in. Telephone number is 917-889-9592. This is your chance to rep your squad. Basically, me and James are going to roll out our top five NFC and AFC rankings pre-draft, right now. If the season were to start today, who is your top five teams? Go ahead and call in now. Once again, 917-889-9592. Get on the line with us, James and Brian. Let us know who your favorite team is. Let us know who your top five teams are. Maybe we're wrong, maybe we're right. But call in and definitely let us know regardless. James, let's start in the AFC. Right now, with all the chaos, with all the moves that have happened, Give me your top five AFC teams heading into the season if the season were to start today.
Well, if the season were to start today, and I'm going to make it six because six there are six teams that make the playoffs, so I'm just going to roll out with it that way. And I'm going to basically if roll out my playoff seeding, if you will, with the sixth seed. I think it's going to be the I think it's going to be the Cincinnati Bengals at the sixth seed. The Bengals are a good team. They're going to be playing an easier schedule than the rest of their division. I think this is a team that could really improve. They're a young team, so this is a team that is really going to do a lot of good. With the five seed is the Buffalo Bills. Now they might be the third best team in the conference, but they're probably going to be the fifth seed because the division is owned by the Patriots. But this is a team that has really built up its pass rush. We might see a cornerback or two. These cornerbacks are still pretty good. They lost a couple of guys, but not that many. Stevie Johnson's back. Fred Jackson is back, and not only is he back, but he is back healthy and on a mission. And this is an offensive scheme that was really able to run well when he was in and healthy. So I've got them as the number five. At the number four, it's probably going to be. I'm going to go with. And now I'm just trying to think of which of those two is going to fall more. Is it going to be the Steelers or is it going to be the Ravens? And I'm going to say that the Steelers are going to fall worse because they've basically put a hatchet to their team, and I think the Ravens are pretty solid and pretty consistent with what they've got going on their team. So I think the Ravens are going to win the NFC North with the Steelers taking a step back again this year. With the number three, then it's going to be the Denver Broncos at the number three seed. Peyton Manning, basically the upgrade level of Peyton Manning from a Tim Tebow is astronomical. That alone gets them back into the playoffs and probably a higher seed. I mean, yes, there's probably going to be some growing pains early on. They're going to lose a couple of games. And Peyton Manning might not be Peyton Manning of so many years ago, but if you're taking the passing prowess of even an injured Peyton Manning versus a Tim Tebow, I'm sorry, there's no comparison whatsoever. So they're going to be the three seed. And the two seed is the Houston Texans. The Houston Texans are one of, if not the best team in the AFC. They did lose a few players to free agency. They cut their right tackle, and they have yet to really replace him thus far. That might be a draft situation, but we're not counting that in there right now. So that's kind of where I'm seeing them. They really need to replace that, and they still have a few issues, particularly number two wide receiver, that I need to address as well. The number one seed, once again, is the New England Patriots. You've got Brady, you've got Belichick, and you've got a massively improved team. They are going to have to find a way to get that pass rush going, and that's something I imagine will happen in the draft, but you never know. But as of right now, just sheer force, I'm going to go with the Patriots as the top team to look out for in the AFC again.
All right, interesting stuff. I was going to roll out my top five, but since you did six, I'm not going to take nearly as long, but I will roll out six as well. Number six for me, I also have the Cincinnati Bengals. This was probably one of the younger teams that had made the playoffs. I think this team has a pretty bright future, so I have them at number six. I could see them going higher, but you're talking about a first-year quarterback and wide receiver, number one wideout. This team finished 9-7, and like you mentioned, James, this team finished third in their division. They are going to be playing the third-place team in all those non-divisional matchups. So they definitely have an easier schedule than some of the teams, like Pittsburgh or Baltimore. Number five for me, this one was a little rough, but I actually went with the same division because you cannot have, if you're going seeding-wise, I've got the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think you cannot possibly cut as much trim the fat, if you will, as much as they have to try and keep Wallace. I think they've sacrificed some of the veteran leadership. I think they will miss Hines Ward some. It might not be initially. It might not be, you know, during the regular season, but there's going to come a point where a Hines Ward presence, whether it be in the red zone, whether it be just a mentor and help these young guys, is going to be sorely missed. Number four for me, this was virtually a toss-up because I think Peyton Manning could quite possibly be the best regular season quarterback to ever play the game, and I only say that because of his record in the postseason. You know, I hear people talk about him as the greatest quarterback ever. I can't put him in the same breath with a Joe Montana or even a Tom Brady because of that. But I'll tell you what, and I could be crazy, but because of the short leash, I'm going to go way out on a limb here, and I'm going to say the San Diego Chargers at number four, James. I think that they win the division. I think it's highly unlikely that Phillip Rivers and Norv Turner lose six games in a row. I think it was the perfect storm, if you will. If you go back and look at Norv Turner's record in the month of December, he's been money. I think that San Diego bounces back, and you see him back into the double-digit wins. Number three for me is Baltimore. Number two is the Houston Texans for the reasons that you mentioned. I think they could very easily be number one. The only reason I don't have them at one, like you mentioned, is because of the right tackle, is because they lost Mario Williams. But to me, the Houston Texans easily have the best ground game probably in the entire NFL. And when you start playing in the playoffs, a ground game, you can go anywhere with a ground game, a rushing attack, as you've seen with the Houston Texans, and be successful. So I like Houston quite a bit. And then number one, New England, you know, Rob Gronkowski, another year into the system. Aaron Hernandez, another year into the system. Stephen Ridley. You know, the only thing that I don't like is that Ben Jarvis Green Ellis is not there. So, you know, we're going to have to see what they're going to do with that situation. But I do still feel like New England needs a feature guy because, especially in the playoffs, I thought Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, I mean, when you're talking about a guy for his career, James, career, had never fumbled the ball. I mean, this guy is the epitome of ball security. Did not fumble the ball in over 250 attempts last year. That's the kind of guy you want on your team. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that you know, I look at. But when you talk about adding a guy like Brandon Lloyd, who led the league in receiving with Kyle Orton throwing him the ball in this exact system that Josh McDaniels is going to be running, it is somewhat scary to think what Brandon Lloyd might be able to do with a Tom Brady throwing him the ball. I mean, we could conceivably, I'm not saying he's going to, but we could conceivably see 1,700 yards and 15 to 18 touchdowns from this guy if Tom Brady and him get clicking on all cylinders. So I do agree with you. That is my top five. James, your top five. Basically, the only difference, you've got Denver with Peyton Manning at three. I don't have them in my top six. I don't have Denver making the playoffs. I said that before. You know, when he signed with Denver, I thought San Francisco would have been the right choice for him. But I think San Diego bounces back. I see them as the three or four seed, and I don't think Denver makes the playoffs.
And the other difference is you have the Steelers making the playoffs. I don't. And I threw the Buffalo Bills in there. I think the Buffalo Bills are definitely a team that can really make some noise, especially with how pathetic the Jets are going to be this year. And with Miami potentially starting Ryan Tannehill at the beginning of the season, I mean, there's probably four wins for the Buffalo Bills between the Jets and the Dolphins. And I think that could go a long way towards cementing themselves as a playoff spot.
Let me ask you this, though. I mean, in all seriousness, I know there's a very good chance that Ryan Tannehill, the ultra-athletic, talented quarterback from Texas A&M, is selected by Miami in the top 10. I mean, the people have actually, this has been gaining momentum. It's a possibility. But we've had several guys on this show that are knowledgeable, that make a living you know, scouting NFL prospects. We've had Eric Galt, Galco from Optimum Scouting. We've had I forgot the gentleman from JB Scouting.
Josh Buchanan.
Thank you, Josh Buchanan. Shane P. Hallam even mentioned. None of these guys seem to think that Tannehill is the kind of guy you're going to be able to bring in year one and have him start from day one. When you have a guy like Matt Moore, who was pretty successful last year, don't you think that they're probably going to at least let Matt Moore start the season? And even if they drafted Tannehill, give this young guy, I mean, they brought in Garrard. I think they probably give whoever the quarterback is they select some time to mature. I think Miami's going to be better than a lot of people believe they're going to be.
Well, here's the problem, though. I mean, while logically it makes perfect sense, you know, let Matt Moore or David Garrard, because they did pick him up in free agency as well, let one of those two hold the reins for a year and let Tannehill develop. But the real problem is when you take a player in the top 10 of the draft, you are not picking him to sit a year. If you look at maybe even the past 2 years, the only guys who did not start eventually in this season without being it due to injury was probably Jake Locker. And while there is a lot of similarities between Locker and Tannehill as far as a skill set point is concerned, I still think that the only reason why Jake Locker was able to sit and why the fans even accepted him sitting was because Matt Hasselbeck is an established and good quarterback. I mean, he is a guy that led a team to a Super Bowl, as opposed to Matt Moore, who's a journeyman backup, and David Garrard, who's not played a down of football in over a year. So, I mean, it's hard to say, hey, we're taking this guy at 8, and yes, we have faith in him, and we're going to put these two guys ahead of him on the depth chart.
Now, you bring up some good points. It's definitely something that's interesting. I think it's time to switch gears, though, and talk about the NFC. And to me, and I know you, because we've had these conversations, you know, for probably the last 10 years, not many people would have argued, James, if somebody were to make the statement that the AFC was the better conference. But over the last couple of years, the balance of power has really started to shift, where now you're seeing two, sometimes three, really good teams per conference. I mean, you know, I know that Dallas wasn't great last year by any means, or the Eagles, but like you mentioned, another year of seasoning. You know, you look at the NFC East, you got the defending Super Bowl champs and the Giants. You've got the Philadelphia Eagles, the Dallas Cowboys. Washington should be a lot better. You know, they've actually got some receivers. The NFC North, you've got the Green Bay Packers, the Detroit Lions, who both made the playoffs. And, oh, by the way, the Chicago Bears, who were 7-3 until Matt Forte and Jay Cutler went down. The NFC South with the New Orleans Saints, the Atlanta Falcons, who both made the playoffs, and then there's this young emerging guy in Carolina named Cam Newton, who set the world on fire. And the Tampa Bay Bucks, you know, they're an interesting story as well. Remember, this is a team that had won 10 games the year before, and last year fell flat on their face. So, I mean, this team is talented. And then the NFC West. You know, San Francisco really stole the spotlight at 13-3, but a lot of people fail to remember the Arizona Cardinals won 7 of their last nine games. Seattle, another team who got off to a slow start, but really got hot towards the end of the season. So it's going to be interesting to see how all these divisions shape up. The St. Louis Rams, a team that really most people would have said, look, this team was terrible. Remember, they only had Sam Bradford for 3 games last year. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. But with all that said, James, when it's all said and done, who's your top 6 seeds in the NFC, and why did they get seeded where they got seeded by you? Give me your top 6.
Well, this may be a homeristic pick, but I'm doing it anyway. With the 6th seed, it's the Detroit Lions. Detroit Lions brought back everybody from last year. They are going to have a little bit of a harder schedule this year. But let's call it what it is. They're still
Actually, you know what? They might not have a harder schedule. Who knows? But they're still a team that's going to be able – they're still a team that's developed. They actually improved in the secondary from Eric Wright to Jacob Tammy. I think that he's a better cornerback all around anyway. Maybe that's just me. That might just be sour grapes, but I'm sticking with it anyway. They brought back Cliff Averill. They have Jeff Bacchus as well. They brought back all of their guys, and plus we're going to see both of their two top running backs, Mikel Lashore and Javon Best, healthy again. So as long as those two do not re-hit the injury bug, that running offense is going to be twice as good as it was with Maurice Morris, who's no longer on any team, and several other players that were just thrown around in there. So I'm very happy to see all of that going on. Plus Stephen Tulloch is back as well. So that's why I have them sitting there at the sixth seed. With the fifth seed, I'm really struggling with the fifth seed as well, because I mean, I've got to decide whether I want Chicago or Green Bay into the playoffs as well, or if I want to throw another team into the mix. But I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay Bucks. The Carolina Panthers are going to really be knocking at the door this year, but they need another year for that defense to gel again. So I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay Bucks. They've made so many improvements. They have the fifth overall pick, which is going to help them tremendously. And they've also got a no-nonsense chop wood head coach who can really – maybe we can really get this team to get behind his message. We saw it at Rutgers when he first came in. Chop that wood became a household thing, and it was almost inspiring what was going on there at Rutgers for those two magical seasons. So I think Greg Schiano's really got a good head on his shoulders, and he's going to get this team to the playoffs year one. With the fourth overall seed, now I'm going to start looking at several of these other teams. And probably it's going to be and just seeding within the division winners is kind of hard. But I think it's going to be the winner of the South, which is going to be the Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons are a good team. They're constantly building. They're constantly growing. And I still think that they've still got one more year of pretty good football in them. So they're going to win the division. The third seed is probably going to be the Chicago Bears. I'm going to actually kick the Green Bay Packers out of the playoffs. And I know that sounds absolutely ridiculous, but that defense has been exposed several times over during the last few weeks of the season and into the playoffs. So I think that this is a real eye-opener for what's going on there in Green Bay, and I don't think they're going to have enough capital or enough moves to make where they're going to be able to fix every hole that they have in that defense. So that's why I'm going to kick them out and have the Bears as the number four seed. The number three seed, the Bears are going to be the three seed, and the number two seed, I'm going to have the San Francisco 49ers. They are they're probably in the weaker division, but the real question is, can Alex Smith recreate what he did last season? Yes, he's going to have a whole bunch of shiny new weapons, but the question is he going to be able to take advantage of them? And while I know a lot of people are going to say that's ridiculous too, Alex Smith was able to get them far into the playoffs, it's a real question if he can do that 2 years in a row. I'm sticking them at number two. And with the number one overall seed, I'm going with the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles are, while they're in a tougher division, they have made a lot of moves, and especially in their biggest weakness, which was up the middle on the run game. They picked up a Pro Bowl caliber inside linebacker, which is an immense improvement over Casey Matthews. They're likely to make a few more moves at the defensive tackle position and fix up that offensive line in the process. So they're right now, they have to be the team to beat again. Dream team part two, maybe, but I'm going with them.
All right, interesting. James, I know some of these, you know, bits, if you will, that we do are somewhat on the fly. But unless my math is incorrect, not only did you leave out the best regular season team from last year in the Green Bay Packers,
I did
but you
that
also
purpose,
left
yep.
out the defending Super Bowl champs in the New York Giants.
Absolutely did. Sure as heck did. Yep, I did that on purpose too.
Wow. 1-917-889-9592. If you are in the chat room right now, if you are in the chat room right now and you are listening, and there's quite a few of you, you have got to call in right now and tell me if you agree with that. Are the Packers and the Giants both going to really miss the playoffs? James says so. Well, James, I have a drastically different top six than you do, obviously. Number six for me, I just can't do it. I'm going with the New Orleans Saints. I think the Saints are still going to make the playoffs. They're too good of a team at home. If they win, say, 7 of the 8 games at home, which I think is easy for them to do, they've went 15-1 over the last 2 seasons at home. I think it's conceivable to say they could go 6-2 or better. You know, basically you're asking them to go 4-4 away from home. I think this team is definitely capable of winning 10 games at least. I see the Saints being the number 6 seed. At the number 5 seed, I actually have the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions are an up-and-coming team. They have a few limitations in my eyes. I'm still interested to see, Mikel LeSean. I'm also really interested to see what they do in the draft to remedy that secondary because they did lose Eric Wright. I know a lot of Detroit fans don't see that as a loss, but I do see it as a loss because he's a sure tackler. He's a guy who can play in the slot for you. And they need all the good defensive backs they can get, and I really think they could even use a ball hawk back in the secondary to help Delmas. It's going to be interesting because especially in this division, I feel like they need some defensive help if they're going to be able to battle some of these teams. You know, you mentioned a team like San Francisco. This team doesn't have the offensive firepower of New Orleans, but they were able to keep the game semi-manageable against New Orleans, where I felt like New Orleans kind of drifted away from Detroit in their game. But I do think Detroit will be a better team this year. I've got them at 5. At number 4, this is where it kind of gets interesting for me. Because obviously, you know, when you think about the fact that I've mentioned New Orleans and then I mentioned Detroit, that means I only have one team from the NFC East. And I only have one team coming from the NFC West. So food for thought. So for me, at number 4, I have the Atlanta Falcons. I think that the teams that the NFC South plays are always brutal. Tony Gonzalez, this is one of those teams that's getting older. And I don't think Atlanta, like, runs away with this division. I think the loss of John Abraham is going to be felt. I mean, remember, this guy has been their best pass rusher, and they let him go because they didn't want to give him the financial compensation that he was looking after. But this is a team that still needs pass rushers. So I think that that's going to be a fatal flaw, especially when you're talking about playing against the likes of a Drew Brees, you know, of a Josh Freeman, of a Cam Newton, just in this division alone. But I do think Atlanta's strong enough defensively and on the ground to where this team probably wins 11 games. They were 10-6 this year. I see them being about that mark, maybe a slight improvement. So I see them getting that 4 seed. The number 3 seed for me is going to be the New York Giants. I have the New York Giants finishing actually a little bit better this year than they did. I have them finishing 11-5 this next year. You know what? I think that when you look at the New York Giants, here's the thing. The New York Giants are one of the few teams that, you know what, they have some games that are just horrendous, god-awful. But this team knows when to pick and choose their battles. They play well when they absolutely need to, when their back's against the wall. For me, the problem I have with Philadelphia, James, is this team just has way too many big personalities under one small roof. And you know, I don't want to say finesse, diva, anything like that, but there is a lot of inner workings here. I feel like Andy Reid's got to work around the clock to keep these guys focused and on task. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just feel like there's just too many superstars on one team, if you get what I'm saying. I feel like you don't have enough of those blue-collar mentality type players that every team really needs to have. Dallas, I'm actually completely unsold on Dallas. You know what? Every year I feel like Dallas is going to be a contender. I like the Brandon Carr signing, but the bottom line is I watched this team for the last 2 years just get eaten alive, not only in the secondary, but outside of DeMarcus Ware, not be able to rush a passer. They brought back Spencer because the pass rushing market completely dried up once guys, you know, like Tambahali, Woodley, some of these other guys, you know, have gotten, you know, were re-signed, restructured. There was just no pass rushers to be had. I just don't see this team being that significantly better. You know, the bottom line is Brandon Carr is great, but you have to have a pass rush to go along with a good corner. Otherwise, the corner, you know, is going to get beat. You can't cover a guy for 8 to 9 seconds. So I've got New York coming in third. So it comes down to two teams. You've got the San Francisco 49ers and the Green Bay Packers. I do believe the Green Bay Packers will be there again. But I'm gonna go with San Francisco actually at number two and Green Bay at number one. And then the reason for that is I think San Francisco has a ton going for them. You know, they returned 22 of 24 starters, number one, on offense and defense. They returned 22 of 24 starters, all 11 on defense, and all of their special teams unit fully intact, as far as kicker, punter, and long snapper. But the key thing is here is the only two position changes, if you will, is they removed Kyle Williams, who was starting last year for an injured Josh Morgan, and replaced him with Randy Moss. Or Ted Ginn Jr. replaced him for Randy Moss. And the right guard situation, which it looks very likely we're going to end up probably, Niners are going to end up drafting a guard probably in round one, which is never a great thing. But at the same time, if that's what your weakness is, then that's what you need to upgrade. But San Francisco was 13-3, James. But the problem, here's the one leery thing that I have about San Francisco. They led the league in turnovers. They turned the ball over the fewest amount of times of anybody. But their offense, if you look at their passing yards, they did not scare anybody with their passing attack. So I got to commend Jim Harbaugh, Trent Baalke for going out and saying, hey, look, you know what? We're going to bring Alex back. Remember, this is going to be the second year in the system. This is the first time in his entire career, James, in 8 years, that he'll be in the same system for 2 years in a row. That's a huge advantage, number one. I think you'll see an improvement. But I think the biggest thing is you finally get this guy some legitimate weapons to throw to. In the NFC Championship game against the New York Giants, the game that went into overtime where San Francisco nearly went to the Super Bowl, if not for two botched fumbles by their kick returner, Kyle Williams, Alex Smith only had one completion to a wide receiver, and that was to Michael Crabtree for 3 yards. So you bring in a Randy Moss. You bring in a Mario Manningham from the New York Giants, who's a very, very good number two / number three guy. And all of a sudden, you go from Michael Crabtree being your number one guy to now he's probably your number two or three guy. You got two fantastic tight ends. You've upgraded the backfield by bringing in another big back in Brandon Jacobs that can hammer away. Randy Moss is going to stretch the field, which is going to give more room to the running game. I don't think there's any way possible that the offense isn't going to be better. I guess the real question is, can the defense, who's returning all 11 starters, can the defense be as good as they were last year? I mean, that's really what it boils down for me.
Well, okay, so here's a few teams that I just noticed are missing from your selection. First of all, the Chicago Bears, a team that very well could have made the playoffs if Matt Forte and Jay Cutler did not go down at the tail end of the season. Plus, you're going to add to that fact that that they are playing in the third place schedule, as opposed to the first place schedule that the Green Bay Packers will be playing. And they also added Brandon Marshall. Now, yes, the offensive line is a scary bit, but I do still believe that we're going to see a vast improvement in that sense as well. I wouldn't be surprised at all if we saw the Bears take a offensive tackle, maybe a Jonathan Martin or a Mike Adams, with their first round pick, especially considering they got that first round pick coming. And let's see. Actually, I have no problem with the thinking of the Saints being in there, but you also didn't include the Eagles, who are also going to be playing that third place schedule.
Second.
Second. They did pass the Cowboys. I forgot about that. You're right. But still, this is a team that won the vast majority of their second half of the season games, have all the talent to do what they need to do, and plus are bringing back quite a few players on top of, you know, bringing in a Pro Bowl middle linebacker, which was their major weakness last season.
You want to know why here? Let me give you the answer to both of those questions, and you kind of answered the Chicago one, so I'll briefly touch on this before we move on, James. Chicago, for me, was easy. Number one, for starting offensive line scares me to death. Number two, I have a very unmotivated Matt Forte. I might change my opinion if the Bears' running back situation changes some. And number three, Zach Brown is no longer in the secondary to bolster the depth at the cornerback position. He started several games for you at corner. And your starting safeties now are Chris Conte, who's a second-year kid out of Cal, and Major Wright. Their secondary is just not scary. You look at the other teams in that division, I think that Chicago's going to have to score too many points. I think they're going to get out of their element, which is a safe, ball control type offense. Brandon Marshall brings something to the table, no doubt about it. But you know as well as I do, the one bad thing he'll also bring is that Jay Cutler will have that added sense of security. I think you're going to see his pick numbers start to go up. He was a lot more careful with the ball last year, which translated to more wins. I think you're going to see his pick numbers start to go up slightly again this year, and I think you're going to see production and overall wins about the same. They were 8-8 last year. They got off to a 7-3 start. I don't see this team finishing better than 9-7. As far as Philadelphia, I'm going to give you an interesting stat. Of every single team in the NFL that finished 8-8 or better, 8-8 or better, okay? Now, just for ease of math, okay, that's 20 teams. 20 of the 32 teams finished 8-8 or better. Of all those teams, the Philadelphia Eagles are the only team that finished with a losing record at home. This team, to me, just does not feel like a mentally tough team. This team does not feel like a team that when you put their back against the wall, that this is a team that's going to come out swinging and fighting. And you know what? This year is going to be highly, highly contested, highly, highly competitive, in the NFC East, as it is every year, but especially just in the NFC. So I have them missing it, and you know what? this might be that year where we see Andy Reid finally get the axe. I don't know. I'm not making any bold predictions, but I wouldn't be shocked because I do have the Philadelphia Eagles missing the playoffs. I do. I see them right about where they're at right now. I think they're an 8-8 team. Remember, this team is 8-8, James, but at the same time, they were 4-1 over their last five games. Once the pressure was pretty much off, once they pretty much had nothing to play for, suddenly they got good. If you look at them from the beginning of the year, basically all the way up until the last five, six, 7 weeks, this team was stiff. Even the very first game of the season against the St. Louis Rams, who we found out was an abysmal team, they were stiff, and they really that game wasn't even won until the fourth quarter. So I do. I have Philadelphia not making the playoffs. I don't have them currently in my top five. We do got to get moving, though, James. We got about 40 minutes left. We have quite a few people in the chat room. I want to go ahead and roll out our mock draft. I feel like we've kind of glossed over this. We told people we were going to roll out 5 to 10 picks, you know, a week, kind of give the thought process behind it. Well, we've lagged a little bit here a week or two, so what I want to do is in the last 40 minutes is I actually want to go through the whole process, if we could, of picking, you know, all these picks, if you will. And I want to start with that. What I want to do is I want to actually do the entire first round. So I'm going to start off, James, you start off, you do the odds, I'll do the evens, and let's do the entire first round. Give me your selection and give me the thought process, if you will, behind it, and we'll plug away. And in the last 40 minutes, we're going to roll out a complete mock draft with analysis, basically, and foresight and the thought process that goes behind each of these picks.
Well, the first overall pick is the Indianapolis Colts. Right now, there's only two options really on the table, and really, it's really quickly dwindling down to one option. Andrew Luck is going to be the pick here. While the general manager of the Indianapolis Colts is from the Philadelphia Eagles organization, which, you know, sometimes makes me think, you know, they're going to go for the more athletic quarterback. They're going to go after RG3. I think that that's maybe a schematic thing as opposed to a hard-pressed mental view right now. While I'm not going to count RG3 out right now, I think eventually what we're going to see is a pair of teams that or a team that's going to say, all right, which one of these guys is going to sign for less, if in fact that's in fact possible, and I don't even know that based off the salary cap or the rookie salary cap and how it's implemented. I'm not quite sure how that works, but with that said, the first overall pick is going to be Andrew Luck.
All right, interesting. Yeah, I agree with you. I think it probably is Andrew. I'm sitting here at the second pick. I'm the Washington Redskins. I swapped first-round picks, number two for my previous number six, and I also gave up two additional first-round picks and a second-round pick. I give up a ginormous price to move up four spots, essentially leapfrogging slots 5, 4, 3. So to me, there's only one option here. I mean, I have several needs, but it's a no-brainer. I'm trading up that kind of value. I'm giving it up for a franchise signal caller. You've taken Andrew Luck. I'm taking the other guy at this point, the Washington, that I believe is a franchise signal caller. I'm going with the Robert Griffin III, quarterback from Baylor. Throws a fantastic deep ball, has unreal athleticism, very accurate. And, you know, the biggest thing is this kid is a leader on and off the field, no issues, very intelligent. Washington has not had a franchise signal caller probably, honestly, in the last 20 years that you could say, hey, this is the future of Washington. So it's time for them to secure that, and I think they do with this pick.
With the third pick on the Minnesota Vikings, and the Vikings right now have dwindled themselves down to two options. While Justin Blackmon is a real outside shot third option, the really two options are Morris Claiborne from LSU, the cornerback. With and the thought process behind that would be that you've got Calvin Johnson in division, you've got Greg Jennings in division, and you've got now Brandon Marshall in division. You're going to need that number one corner to shut him down. But that's not where they're going here. They're going to go with Matt Khalil. First of all, left tackles are extremely more rare than starting corners. They could they could get Robinson in the early second round, and he could be just fine as a starting corner, in my opinion. Or if Gilmore, in fact, drops to the second round, that's a possibility as well. That's something that they could do in the second round. Matt Khalil is probably I have him as a top. As a top three left tackle prospect in the past 5 years, and I don't even think it's close in that sense. So they need one to really keep Christian Ponder upright. They invested number 13 overall last year, and Ponder, they have to keep him upright and continue with his development. So Matt Khalil has to be the pick here at number three.
All right, and I understand the connection. I understand the foresight there. Cleveland, I'm sitting here at four. The draft has really unfolded exactly like I thought it would. I don't need a left tackle because I probably have the best left tackle in all of football in Joe Thomas. I could have used one of the quarterbacks, but once Washington traded up, I quickly realized that wasn't going to happen. I did not re-sign Peyton Hillis, who is now off to Kansas City. So for me, this pick is really a no-brainer. People have talked about the devaluing of the running back position and the possibility of me not selecting this guy here. But let me tell you this. When you look at the power, the balance, the ability of Trent Richardson, the only back really in the last 5 to 8 years that it parallels is a guy like Adrian Peterson. And if Trent Richardson turns out to be Adrian Peterson-esque, nobody will ever question this pick. For those reasons, I'm trying to help out a young quarterback getting his last opportunity in Colt McCoy. I need to surround him with some weapons. I'm thinking about taking a Justin Blackmon, but long-term, the fact that I don't have a running back currently on the roster that I think is an every-down starter, I'm not completely trusting in Montario Hardesty, who I feel like got an opportunity. I'm taking Trent Richardson, the running back from Alabama.
With the fifth pick on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and everything's really going the way I expected it to, with the Peyton Hillis jettisoning, it's easily I really thought that was going to be the pick as well. So I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at a few options here, but really it's all going to dwindle down to one, because I'm the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I've got Aqib Talib possibly facing jail time. I've got a lot of bad apples in my cornerbacking core. A lot of guys are getting right on the verge of suspension. I need a real smart athlete who is a team player and a great guy off the field to kind of be the leader on the defense, especially with Rondé Barber getting older. So I'm going to go with Morris Claiborne, the cornerback out of LSU.
All right, and that pick makes quite a bit of sense. Understand the pick, especially with the situation surrounding Aqib Talib. I'm number six. I'm the St. Louis Rams. The draft honestly could not have unfolded any better for me unless Matt Khalil somehow miraculously fell to number six. But I'm sitting here at number six. The one thing that I desperately need is weapons for my franchise signal caller, in Sam Bradford, and there's one guy here on the board who fits that build, and that's Justin Blackmon. I've got a lot of number twos. I drafted a guy in Greg Salas last year. I drafted a guy last year in Titus Young. Young went to the Detroit Lions, but I drafted a guy in Pettis. You know, I have a lot of number twos, but I don't have a number one. Wasn't able to keep Brandon Lloyd there in St. Louis. So I'm going to go ahead and draft who, in many people's minds, is the best wide receiver in this draft class. A guy I've seen what A.J. Green was able to do coming in right away, and I'm hoping Justin Blackmon will be able to do the same thing. I'm taking wide receiver Justin Blackmon from Oklahoma State.
Well, I'm sitting here at number 7 at the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I need one of everything. I honestly do. I need one of absolutely everything but a running back. That's the situation I'm looking at for the Jacksonville Jaguars, so no pick is surprising. But I am going to surprise everyone. I'm not going to go Riley Reiff, the talented tackle from Iowa. I'm not going to go Quinton Coples, the talented pass rusher out of North Carolina. No, I'm going to go with a guy who many people have as the number 2 defensive end on the chart, and that's going to be Courtney Upshaw, the defensive end out of Alabama. The reasoning behind this is Quinton Coples is too hot and cold. And that's something that that Gene Smith absolutely hates. But on top of that, the character issues are really starting to arise, especially after his combine interview saying that that he kind of gave up on North Carolina. And plus, Upshaw is the better pass rusher out of the two. And let's face it, Aaron Kampman cannot stay onto the field for any extending length of time. Plus, he's also getting old. So we're going to really start on the pass rush, and we're going to select Courtney Upshaw, defensive end from Alabama.
All right, interesting. Well, I'm sitting here now. I'm Miami, and this has definitely caused me to take notice, to reevaluate the situation, if you will, because I do need a quarterback, and I'm strongly considering Ryan Tannehill here, as the other two quarterbacks are off the board, the other two signal callers that are possible first-round picks. I didn't expect Quinton Coples to be here from North Carolina. Miami, you know, my team is switching back to a 4-3 front. I'm not quite sure if Koemisi fits that, so I'm going to need an edge rusher to pair with the very talented edge rusher that I already have in Cameron Wake. I also could use a right tackle opposite Jake Long. Vernon Carey is not been the right tackle over the last couple of years that I'm really looking for. And if I'm going to bring in a young quarterback, I need to think about that right tackle spot as well. But ultimately, last week I went a different direction, but this week Miami has been dying to get a signal caller in there. They tried desperately to sign Manning. They tried desperately to sign Alex Smith. They basically threw money at David Garrard to keep him there. They've done everything they can. Fans have literally picketed out front. Call this a gut reaction. Call this a knee-jerk type pick. But I think that they need to bring in a guy that they believe may be a franchise-style quarterback. And for those reasons, I think that Ryan Tannehill will be the pick. I need to bring in a guy that could possibly be a franchise signal caller. I haven't had one of those since Dan Marino. That's an awfully long time. I don't have a wide receiver, so Malcolm Floyd will get consideration here. I mentioned switching back to the 4-3 front, so Quinton Coples will get consideration here. And obviously Riley Reiff will get strong consideration here, because I feel like I could upgrade the offensive line, but I can't pass on a franchise signal caller. So I'm going with Ryan Tannehill, the talented quarterback from Texas A&M.
With the 9th overall pick, I am going to be the Carolina Panthers. And there are, I mean, I need a little bit of everything on the defensive side. The offense was able to score at least 21 points a game. I have to get a defense that's going to be able to hold the opposing offense to less than that. And then I can start winning football games. So really it's going to start and end at the defensive side of the football, probably for the entire draft, in my opinion. So right now there's tons of talent available. There's a whole bunch of defensive tackles. There's Atari Poe available. There's Fletcher Cox available, but I'm not going to go that way. I'm going to go a different way, and this is going to be a little bit of an experiment here. I'm going to go with Quinton Coples, the defensive end out of North Carolina. There's been a lot of talk of him coming in for visits. There's been a lot of talk of keeping a close eye on him in the Senior Bowl,
But the real interesting thing that a few others have told me is that he's getting pushed in a lot more. He's getting a lot closer to the tackle. He's not being a wider pass rusher. I'm thinking he might be effective as an under tackle. Maybe Greg Hardy and Charles Johnson on the outside and put Quentin Copeland in that under tackle. So I'm going to take a real strange move here and go with Quentin Copeland, defensive end out of UNC, for the pick for the Carolina Panthers.
All right, and that's why we do this on the fly. I have no previous knowledge of what James is doing. He has no previous knowledge of what I'm doing. Before the draft, that probably, as I'm sitting here at number 10 on the Buffalo Bills, probably would have angered me, alarmed me, if you will, because I needed edge rushers. Courtney Upshaw is already gone. Quentin Couples just went right in front of me. But I have Mario Williams now, so I don't need to reach at number 10 for the third best rusher in you know, Melvin Ingram when I feel like maybe this guy isn't a top 10 prospect. Instead, I'm going to go in a different direction. Another area that Miami really needs to improve. They invested a lot of money in Stevie Johnson. They've invested a lot of money in Ryan Fitzpatrick. They need to invest some money in protecting this guy. Demetrius Bell, who was a seventh-round pick from 2 years ago, just left via free agency. He's probably was probably their best offensive lineman. I'm going to help shore up that offensive line right now. He might play left tackle, he might play right tackle, but the one thing I know for sure as a Buffalo Bills fan, as a Buffalo Bill front office person, I should say, is that Riley Reiff, the offensive tackle from Iowa, will be starting from day one.
Okay, so I'm sitting here at number 11 on the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm going to hang up the phone, I'm going to unplug the phone, I'm walking straight up to the commissioner. I'm not even going to hand it to the runner. I'm going to run up there myself and hand it straight to the commissioner's hand. I'm going to Dontari Poe. Right now, their biggest need is the nose tackle. They fixed the right tackle position, which was a big need for them. They also have a nagging need at cornerback, but there's a lot more depth cornerback position than the nose tackle position. And in this draft, Dontari Poe reminds me a lot of Vince Wilfork, especially the angles he takes, the athleticism, the size. I'm saying, hey, hallelujah, I've got my nose tackle. My front seven is complete. I am taking Dontari Poe, nose tackle from Memphis. Lock it up.
All right, I like the pick, and I definitely agree with you. I think the pick makes a ton of sense. I'm sitting here at number 12 on the Seattle Seahawks. I come coming off a promising season. I have a few needs. Okay, I don't need a quarterback, obviously, because I've already secured the services of Matt Flynn. I have a decent backup quarterback, so I'm not looking for a young quarterback. I've got a decent offensive line. I do have a few needs here, though. I feel like I need to improve the pass rush significantly. I've got one good defensive end in Chris Clemens. I could also do myself a favor by upgrading the linebacking core. Leroy Hill could use to be upgraded over. David Hawthorne actually split and went to New Orleans. So I could use an upgrade at the linebacking position. Also, I could use an upgrade at corner. I thought Brown did a fantastic job. Brownie did a fantastic job last year. But Marcus Trufant has not been as good as he's been in the past. Bringing in another young corner could be a good opportunity. So when I'm looking at the board here, when I'm looking at who is available to me, I start to look. Luke Cluey, from the linebacker from Boston College, makes a ton of sense. I also like Melvin Ingram for the 4-3 front, the defensive end from South Carolina. I'm also thinking of Fletcher Cox or possibly a Michael Brockers defensive tackle, because they could use some help at that under tackle position next to the their talented nose tackle Brandon Mabine. But in the end, I got to go with a pass rush. I got to be able to create havoc. And you know what? The guy has limitations, but at the same time, he has a ton of production in one of the toughest divisions in all of college sports, and that's the SEC. So I got to go with Melvin Ingram, talented defensive end from South Carolina. Guy, it has the production. All the measurables might not measure out, but at the same time, this guy has been highly productive against some of the best offensive tackles, some of the best players in the country. So I'm going with Melvin Ingram, defensive end from South Carolina, to help shore up that pass rush there in Seattle.
Wow. As the Arizona Cardinals, I'm rather disappointed. That was going to be the pick that I was going to make. At 13, the Cardinals did lose a ton of linebackers this offseason, including Joey Porter, who's just way too old, as well as several others that just didn't fit the mold anymore. So Melvin Ingram would have fit perfectly into that situation. But right now, I'm looking at – we re-signed Levi Brown – but could we switch him over to right tackle and possibly take a left tackle here? Is cornerback Stephen Gilmore, Drake Kirkpatrick, Janoris Jenkins, those are all guys who are available on the board right now that we could definitely use and use particularly well. But I think I'm going to stick with the left tackle. I'm going to go with Jonathan Martin over Mike Adams. Very slightly, the left tackle from Stanford. He's a better pass blocker, and really, as of right now, Kevin Collins needs all the help he can get. Let's face facts. Or John Skelton, if he ends up taking the starting position away from Collins in the second year. So. Either way, having that extra boost of pass rush help is going to, or a pass blocking help is going to really secure both bookends for quite a long time. So with the 13th overall pick, the Arizona Cardinals are going to take Jonathan Martin, left tackle from Arizona, or from Stanford.
All right, I like the pick. And here I am. I'm the Dallas Cowboys. I'm sitting here at number 14. I'm drafting a little higher than I'm used to drafting. But last year, I was drafting in the top 10. I took Tyron Smith. I've helped to shore up my secondary, signing probably the number one corner in free agency in Brandon Carr. So I have a talented young corner now. I could still look in the secondary, especially at safety, next to Sensabaugh back there. I got Mark Barron, who's on the board, easily the most talented safety in the entire draft from Alabama, hard hitter, played against elite competition. So I'm thinking about him. I could also bring in another corner. You know what? I released Terrence Newman, so bringing in Carr, although an upgrade, does not help to improve the depth any. So I could bring in a guy like a Drake Kirkpatrick, but I already have Skandrick. I already have Mike Jenkins. So he would probably be three or four for me. So in the end, I'm bringing in a guy that I feel can be a significant upgrade and also start right away. I had a ton of Smith with Tyron Smith last year, played in the Pac-10, great translation. So I'm going to take the first guard off the board. And follow the same school as you. I'm going with David DeCastro, offensive guard from Stanford. We've seen a ton of issues from that offensive line last year after they released a few veterans like Andre Girard, Mark Colombo. I think that they're going to be committed to improving this offensive line for Tony Romo's sake. So for that, I'm going with David DeCastro, offensive guard from Stanford, who in my opinion is easily the best offensive guard in this entire draft.
And now I'm here with Philadelphia at 15. DeCastro was very tempting. There's also a ton of defensive tackles, and a lot of them are falling at this point. I mean, a few of these guys are definitely a lot lower than their national average. I mean, Brockers is considered easily a top 15 pick, as well as Fletcher Cox from Mississippi State. Now the question is, what am I really looking for in my defensive tackle? and which one's better for me right away. Right now I'm the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm thinking, hey, we're only a few players away from doing some real damage. They drafted a guard last year, and could really use another one. So Cordry Glenn, considering DeCastro's off the board, Cordry Glenn, a guy who can play two positions, not only guard but right tackle as well, that could really be a major help, and I could see his stock really rising here. But I think I'm going to go with Fletcher Cox, the defensive tackle from Mississippi State. He's more pro-ready than Brockers, I feel. He's a better pass rusher than Brockers. And also a little bit less in the issues department as well. So I'm going to take Fletcher Cox, the defensive tackle from Mississippi State, for the Philadelphia Eagles at 15.
All right, so that's through our first 15 picks. We do have about 15 minutes left, James, so we are going to pick up the speed. We are going through our first round of our Sports City Chefs mock draft with Brian and James here on the NFL Front Office Show, brought to you by Sports City Chefs. Once again, we want to tell all of you, thank you so much for tuning in, continuing to listen to us. We do appreciate that. So with the last pick, James, you went with Michael Cox. Fletcher Cox, the talented defensive tackle from Mississippi State for Philadelphia. I'm sitting here at 16. I'm the New York Jets. I just signed Tim Tebow. I feel like even though the defense was an issue last year, I feel like I need to add to this offense. Cordry Glenn, a guy you just mentioned, is a definite possibility here. I also feel like I could bring in, I could use a wide receiver, especially a big red zone threat, because Plexico Burris was not brought back, and Santonio Holmes is the only other guy there. A talented guy like Michael Floyd, who's a big physical wide receiver, might make some sense here. A guy like Kendall Wright might make some sense here. I also think another guy that makes a ton of sense here is Mark Barron, the safety, who could be a significant upgrade over Eric Smith. That division, you know, you play against Thomas Brady, you definitely need to be able to defend the pass. You know, all these names are swirling, but I'm the Jets. I'm playing in the Big Apple. I need to go for the glamour pick. I can't get a safety in round one when the offense is lacking. So I'm going after Plexico's replacement. I'm going with Michael Floyd, the talented wide receiver from Notre Dame.
Very interesting pick, and I'm sitting here at 17 on the Cincinnati Bengals, and it's going to be a real difficult pick. I mean, I was hoping that DeCastro would fall this way. There are still quite a few wide receivers that I could take a look at in the case that if Jerome Simpson does not make his way back to the field due to his off the field issues. And really, the Cincinnati Bengals, at least thus far, as far as drafting is concerned, has been really adamant about staying away from character issue guys. So I think Michael Floyd might not have been the right pick for them, considering this kind of newfound strive towards character. And that picks Janoris Jenkins, I think, off of the reservation as well. So I'm actually going to go with Cordry Glenn, the offensive guard slash right tackle from Georgia. He's a guy who's really moving up the boards, I feel, and I don't think he would have lasted too much longer if I didn't scoop him up here. There is a big need at the offensive guard position for the Cincinnati Bengals, so I feel that this is something that they can really get themselves behind. So with this pick, I'm going to go with Cordry Glenn, the offensive tackle from or the offensive guard from Georgia.
All right, interesting pick. Next up on the clock is the San Diego Chargers, and obviously, I got to get moving here as we're running out of time. Outside linebacker is easily the number one need here, James. And I don't believe there's a pass rusher when you've seen how many have flown off the board that's worthy of this high a pick. So when I turn to my next biggest need, as a team, we released Marcus McNeil, who was our number one, you know, our left tackle. So he's not there. I think left tackle could be upgraded. I think keeping Phillip Rivers safe has got to be a priority. So when you start looking at some of the guys that, that could potentially be, you know, the pick there, you know, Mike Adams, his name is going to fly around, you know, as a possible suitor. You know, you're also going to hear the name, you know, you've mentioned Jonathan Martin, Riley Reap. These guys are off the board. So I'm trying to figure out which guy for San Diego will make the most sense. They could also look as kind of a surprise pick. They could also look at Luke Kluwe, because Luke Kluwe actually fits what they need, which is a run-stuffing middle linebacker. I'm trying to figure out, you know, what is going to be the best situation for me. You've already taken Cordy Glenn off the board. Ultimately, I am probably going to reach slightly, but I'm going to go with kind of a shocker pick here, a guy that I think could be better as a pro than he was in college, because this is what happens in on the draft day. You see guys project to go a little bit higher. So I'm going to go with Nick Perry, the talented outside linebacker from USC. I think the value ultimately ends up being better at outside linebacker with a guy like Nick Perry than it is at offensive tackle, when you consider the next highest guy is probably Mike Adams.
Great pick. This Chicago Bears are up. They have offensive line issues, and that's been well documented, but there's a really tackle here that is Mike Adams really the tackle that I want to go with here? That's a big question. They could always use a number two wide receiver. Kendall Wright's still available, as well as several others. And with Johnny Knox coming off of back surgery, that's a big question as well. They do need some more interior linemen, interior defensive linemen. So Michael Brockers and Devon Still are still also real possibilities here. And then there's and so with this pick, I think I'm going to go with Michael Brockers, the defensive tackle from LSU. He's fallen enough, that, and this is still quite a big need. I think the addition of Brandon Marshall will keep the wide receiver coach a little bit happy at this point. So I think Brockers, to really man up that defense, is where they go here.
All right. Well, next up on the clock is the Tennessee Titans, and I'm running to the podium here, because I know that the guy I'm about to select would not have lasted three more picks. Tennessee has a huge hole there to fill at the number one cornerback position, as they did not re-sign Courtland Finnegan. He's moved on to a lucrative contract with the St. Louis Rams. As the Titans, I'm playing in the same division with the Houston Texans, who are now the team to beat. I got to have somebody who's going to be able to match up on a big, physical, talented wide receiver like Andre Johnson. So with that said, I'm bringing in a big, physical, talented, fast guy who played in a tough, tough division, the SEC. I'm bringing in Dre Kirkpatrick, the talented corner from Alabama, to help shore up that secondary with the missing piece of Courtland Finnegan. So Tennessee Titans selects Dre Kirkpatrick of Alabama.
All right, I'm back with the Cincinnati Bengals at 21. Kendall Wright's still available. This is a guy I'd really like to throw into this organization. But I also might want to take a look at cornerback as well. It is a hard decision. I'm going to make the move, and I'm going to make a little bit of a shopping pick. I'm going to bypass Janoris Jenkins due to his character issues, and I'm going to go with somebody who might be just as talented and maybe possibly in the real thing go a little bit higher. I'm going with Stephen Gilmore, the cornerback out of South Carolina.
All right, interesting pick. I am next on the clock as Cleveland. The Cleveland Browns, as we've talked about, need playmakers. With my number four overall selection, I took Trent Richardson. I do have a few needs here. I could look to shore up the interior offensive line to help protect my quarterback. I could also use a pass rusher, a weak outside linebacker, a really go get after it kind of guy. That's something that I'm lacking. I could also use a middle linebacker. I feel like, you know, Luke Kluwe has fell a ton further than he should, but this is the way it has played out. So I could use that key cog to kind of shore up the middle there. I could also go after Kendall Wright right here and give my young quarterback another weapon opposite Greg Little to really stretch the field and give him some weapons. But ultimately, in the scenario we've been given, as much sense as a Kendall Wright makes here, I think that if you have a chance to really cement a middle linebacker, a leader of the defense for the next 10 years, a talented tackler, a sure tackler, you got to go get him, especially in a division like that where you face Baltimore and you face Pittsburgh four times a year, essentially, between the two teams. So with that said, I need to be able to compete and beat the teams in my division. So I'm going with Luke Cluey, the linebacker from Boston College.
Well, at the 23 overall pick, I am my very own Detroit Lions, and the Lions have one major need, and they don't need choir boys on their defense. I think that's been pretty well established. They have one major need, one great player sitting there, and really no offensive lineman outside of Mike Adams to really be accounted for here. So for me, this is a slam dunk pick. They're not even going to take calls. With the 23 overall pick, the Detroit Lions are going to take Janoris Jenkins, the cornerback out of the University of North Alabama.
All right, interesting pick. I like it, and I agree with you, especially with the recent run. 24 on Pittsburgh. There's a couple guys here that I have to consider. Pittsburgh needs. I feel like Pittsburgh needs help probably on defense more than offense. Although Mike Adams has to get consideration here, but I don't think he'll get serious consideration. He's just not that physical guy that the Steelers look to. I think Kobe Fleener is a serious possibility after running a 4.46 in his pro day, giving Big Ben a talented receiving threat like a Kobe Fleener makes sense, especially when you've seen how well Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez has made sense. Miller is much more of a blocking tight end. He's a good receiver, but he's not going to get any kind of separation. This team is going to have to play a little bit closer to the vest this year. I also, when I'm looking here for Pittsburgh, I got to be considering this defensive line. And I start thinking about some of the defensive tackles possibly, that are on the board. Obviously, Fletcher Cox gone. Obviously, Michael Brocker's gone. Obviously, Dontario Poe gone. But Devon Still is still there. And I think Devon Still and Whitney Marcellus is probably the two remaining defensive ends five techniques guys, maybe with an Andre Branch that can be considered here in the first round, seriously. And I think Pittsburgh needs defensive line help that bad. And for that, I got to go with the Penn State guy. He's got to get the nod here. So with that said, Pittsburgh's going to help to shore back up that run defense and take Devon Still, the defensive end slash tackle, defensive tackle from Penn State.
Oh, stabbed right in the heart. The Denver Broncos are reeling. They had the cards filled out. They were just sitting there waiting for the pick to be made to hand it in. But you took the guy they wanted. Now they're really kind of in scramble mode. They spent a lot of free agent capital on wide receivers and tight ends to keep Peyton Manning happy. So I think that's off the board. They could maybe use an interior offensive lineman, but Cordry Glenn and DeCastro are both off the board, and there's not another guard that's really worthy of the pick. So where do they go from here? They could look at a running back and potentially go in that sense, but I just don't see that as a possibility. They could Boston College, Keekly, is he still on the board?
No, he's gone. Yeah, yeah. He went to, let me go back over my notes. Luke Cluey went to Cleveland at 22.
Okay, he went to Cleveland at 22, so do I go for Dont'a Hightower here? I don't really like the fit in a 4-3 that we're currently running here in Denver, so it's a real bit. I could take a look. Actually, is Drake Kirkpatrick available?
No, Drake Kirkpatrick is gone as well. Drake Kirkpatrick went to... Drake Kirkpatrick went to Tennessee at 20.
Okay, he went to Tennessee at 20, so that, and of course Detroit ended that run. There's not really a guy available, and at that position that's really worthy of this pick, so I'm going to go with a kind of a curveball here. I'm going to go with Kendall Reyes, the defensive tackle out of UConn. It's a major position that they have a major need at. That is the defensive tackle position. This could really help Von Miller as well as Elvis Dumervil solidify the pass rush if they get another guy who can do it all. And Kendall Reyes has really had a stock explosion, and that's where I think we're going to go here.
All right, so we're gonna kind of go rapid fire here, James. Kind of give one or two sentences in the pick. At 26, Houston needs a serious playmaking threat opposite Andre Johnson. I mean, they could look to defense. There's definitely some positions of need there. They could definitely help to bolster that pass rush with a guy like Whitney Marcellus or an Andre Branch. But I'm going with Kendall Wright, wide receiver from Baylor. I think he steps in from day one and is a starter and will help to bolster that passing attack. So Houston goes with Kendall Wright, the wide receiver from Baylor.
All right, the New England Patriots have a lot of a few needs. They need a pass rusher and they need secondary help. I think they're going to go Mark Barron here with how the board stacked up, and they're really going to be working on defense from this point out. I think that's where they go.
All right, interesting pick. At number 28, Green Bay Packers are sitting here trying to figure out which direction they should go. They did lose Scott Wells, their center. And to me, this is the perfect time to address that interior offensive line. They got basically Aaron Rodgers almost killed. I'm not liking Adams for this fit. He is a cold weather guy, but I think there's a cold weather guy that makes more sense that, oh, by the way, is from the state of Wisconsin. So I'm going with Peter Kahns, the talented center/guard from Wisconsin.
Bastard. Okay. This is going to be difficult to do on the fly. I'm looking for best player available for the Baltimore Ravens. It's how they always go. Peter Kahns is usually that guy. Nick Perry's taken. So I'm going to go with Dont'a Hightower, the inside linebacker from Alabama. Right now they're going to need a passing of the guard from Ray Lewis to this next guy. They're going to need a guy with a lot of leadership qualities who's going to be able to learn over the year and really take over when in fact Ray hangs it up after next season. So with this pick, they're going to go after Dont'a Hightower as the best player available.
All right, San Francisco 49ers, they really only have one serious need that is not depth, that is a starting position, and that's right guard. Currently they have a fifth-round pick from last year, Kevin Peterson, slated in there, or Kevin Kilgroy as the starter at right guard. So we need some competition in there. I'm not satisfied with that. I'd like some more playmakers, but I have a ton of playmakers at this point on offense. I'm returning all 11 starters on defense. So I'm bringing in an offensive guard to compete for that spot, and I believe this guy can actually win that spot. I'm going with Kevin Zeter, the offensive guard from Wisconsin. He brings toughness, nastiness, something that I like in my power run offense. I'm going with Kevin Zeter, offensive guard from Wisconsin, for the San Francisco 49ers at 30.
All right, at 31, I'm the New England Patriots. There's two positions I'm looking at. I'm looking at running back because there's a lot of great value at this position. And we also just let go of Benjarvis Green-Ellis. There's also the position of pass rusher. This is something they've greatly needed. And I think the well's pretty much dried up at the 3-4 defensive end prospects. So I believe I'm going to go with Whitney Mercilus. The defensive end, offensive linebacker, could possibly play a five tech from Illinois as the pick here. They just need it way too bad. Andre Branch was also a high consideration at this pick. It's going to be basically who they like better of those two.
All right, and with the last pick of the mock draft here, I am the Super Bowl champion, New York Giants. I'm getting flabbergasted there. I've got a couple needs here. Offensive line is definitely an issue here. Mike Adams is getting strong consideration here. I could use a middle linebacker, but the problem is there's not one that warrants the pick. I could also use a corner, but I'm going to give you a curveball. After seeing all the success that many teams have had with the two tight end wide receiver sets, after the fact that the New York Giants had not one but two tight ends go down with ACL injuries and neither one of them are ready yet, being Jake Ballard and Travis Beckham, and how successful and what an accomplished receiver this guy is. As the New York Giants, I'm going to throw a little bit of a curveball here. Not many people are expecting this, but I'm going to go with Kobe Fleener, the talented tight end from Stanford, as my selection to help bolster that offense even a little bit more, and also add an additional blocker there in the running game. That is our 32 picks. James, our first round is complete. We did run a couple minutes over. Wanted to say thank you very much for joining me here on air. Definitely check NFLDraftCountdown.com. Go in there, go into the mock draft section. You'll see five rounds in 5 days. James, give us a final thought here before we get up out of the kitchen on another beautiful Wednesday night. Thanks for holding it down with me.
Absolutely. This mock draft was a lot of fun. I think we did so well on this that I think I'm going to actually post this one up on YouTube. So check for the video of this mock draft onto YouTube in a few days. On top of that, I'm really surprised. The one real big surprise of our mock draft, I have to say, is that Ryan Tannehill did not come off the board. That was a major surprise, and probably if Tannehill is still available when New England picks, we're probably going to see one of those infamous trade-down situations that they love so much. But with that said, go to draftcountdown.com in the forums section under fantasy. You will find the 5 rounds in 5 days mock draft sign-up thread. Make sure you go there if you want to participate. And if you're listening to the archive, you probably are going to want to participate. So so definitely check that out and be ready because coming April 11th, it'll be on.
All right. Well, that is all from the NFL Front Office Show. You can see us again next week on Wednesday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Western Time, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Time. That is all from us for now. Check in with our scheduled premium programming Monday through Sunday. We have programming here for you. We'll be back tomorrow at 5 p.m. with the NFL, or excuse me, with the Callers Cookout. James, see you next week, my friend. The NFL is just about to get going with draft next month.